introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right. We are back. We are live with another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Once again, we got the full crew here for you. And we're just going to jump right into it because it was a busy day in the NFL today. A lot of things for us to talk about. QB1, my man, how you doing?
Good, man. Just trying to keep up with all this news that's going on around the NFL. My phone was going crazy. The news really came in waves, so it felt like free agency almost, but it was really fun to keep track of.
Yeah, it was, man. It really did feel a lot like free agency. Really, really, really crazy day. Like a Wednesday news dump in the NFL. Like just everything had to happen today. So, yeah, good times. A lot of free content for us to discuss. Miles, my man, how you doing?
What up? Good. Just busy.
I mean, busy's good, though. Busy's better than not busy.
Yes.
All right. Man of few words. Miles is on the clock today, so we will keep things moving. Miles is like, and yes,
I'm doing this for Prince because
I'm gonna need you to keep really it moving. Yeah, Prince got places to go. Prince, my man, how we doing?
What's going on, y'all?
How are things?
Going on, y'all? Just moved into a new apartment, starting a new job next week.
That penthouse suite, huh?
Yeah, Prince moving on up.
roommates. He said no roommates.
Okay.
No
roommate.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting time in the world of Sexy Prince. So, you know, just living it day by day.
Well, you know what else is exciting times?
And if you have my address, though. So.
You know what else is exciting times? Because we're just going to segue this thing right in. We got our first, we'll say partnership, sponsorship, whatever we want to call it. Climbing the Pocket, linking up with Thrive Fantasy, new way to play daily fantasy. It's very exciting for us, and it is a way for you to support the pod while potentially also putting a little bit of money in your pocket. Thrive is a different way to play DFS, so they wanted to change the game a little bit. The way things work in DFS right now is I know Miles dabbles in there every now and again, but 3% of the people who play on DraftKings, FanDuel, they win 90% of the money. And so the people at Thrive want to switch things up, make a different kind of game, a game that was easier for casual fans to get into. They only use the top players, and it's prop bets. So before every game, you pick 10 players, things like, is Tom Brady going to throw for over or under 250 yards? Pick all the props that you want to pick, compete against other people. Hopefully you win some money. And in signing up, you can support the pod. So if you want to check the show notes, they have a link to the Thrive page in there. Thrive page is the pinned tweet from the CTP Twitter account as well. Check them out. You can play for free to get used to the site. Once you get in there, it's an opportunity to make daily fantasy something that more people can potentially win some money doing. So check them out. We're very, very happy about that. And we're also I'm happy. I won't speak for everyone. First thing we're going to do today, question of the day. How does everyone feel about the Teddy Bridgewater trade? There was a lot of news that went on, but I'm sorry. We're going to talk about the trade of the man, the myth, the legend, the man who's still on our About page on the website. Probably got to update that at some point here since he plays for the dreaded Saints now. But JR, Teddy, going to the Saints, Jets getting a third-round pick. What are your thoughts on this deal, really, for all parties? And what does it mean for the future of our man, Teddy Bridgewater?
So I was shocked when I did read that the Saints did trade for him. I didn't think that they would get into the mix considering that they already are low on draft picks after the Marcus Davenport trade where they traded a first-round pick to move up and get him. They exchanged with the Packers, I believe it was. So they were already a bit low. But from their standpoint, I love it because we all know that they're one play away from being a complete disaster because their backup quarterback situation is not ideal at all. Their backup quarterback right now is Taysom Hill. I believe that was his name. And he's a guy that also plays special team.
Can you tell us anything about this person? Like Taysom, I'd never heard of him before. Who is this?
Yeah, so he's like quarterback slash special teams ace. He's a guy that plays on every single special teams for the Saints. And he's Joe also Webb. He's also, yeah, he's like Joe Webb 2.0, but even more advanced. He plays every single special teams unit. He runs down on kickoff. He plays on kickoff return. And then he also goes in and plays quarterback as well. So both of those guys could go down at any moment. But Drew Brees has been known to stay away from injuries. He's not a guy that's ever been injury prone throughout his career, besides the whole shoulder ordeal with the Chargers way back when. But since he got to New Orleans, he hasn't had any type of lingering injuries or issues or anything like that. But Taysom Hill is their backup quarterback right now. And if you got a quarterback on special teams, that's just not an ideal situation, especially considering how much of a drop-off it would be from Drew Brees. I believe JT Barrett is another guy that's on their roster right now, too. I believe that's got some preseason action as well. So their backup quarterback situation was not ideal at all, but you bring in a guy like Teddy Bridgewater who can get you through a string of games or even through an entire season if Drew Brees does happen to go down or miss some extended time. So I love the trade from the Saints standpoint, but from Teddy's standpoint, I don't really like it that much because Drew Brees, I don't think he's going to retire anytime soon, and it's just another wasted season if Drew Brees stays healthy for Teddy where he is on the sideline, and it's just going to be another what-if situation as he enters free agency, and I just don't think he was signed long-term with the Saints, even if they do try to sell him on a succession plan behind Drew Brees. That's just something I don't think that he would be interested in, because who knows when Drew Brees is going to retire. And then if he does sign long-term, who knows how long Drew Brees would stay as the Saints starting quarterback, even though he's only signed for two more years. He's a guy that's not slowing down in his play at all from what I've seen anyway. So from Teddy's standpoint, I don't really like it because it just seems like another wasted season as a backup quarterback where he's on the sideline. But from the Saints' standpoint, I love it because now they have a better insurance policy at quarterback.
I guess from maybe a marketing or a Teddy's brand standpoint, I know obviously the best case scenario is him getting on the field, playing well, getting himself a big contract. But I guess what about I guess the auxiliary benefit maybe to him of getting to go be around Drew Brees, being around Sean Payton. It seems like guys who go through like New Orleans or the Patriots, their brand, their stock seems to go up a little bit, where guys who really aren't that good. And in this case, Teddy's actually a good football player, but there's oftentimes it seems that like guys who go and just are backups next to Hall of Fame guys get paid more than they probably should at their next gig. You think that might be something that could happen with Teddy?
Yeah, it definitely is. And anytime you can sit in a meeting room with Sean Payton and Drew Brees for an entire year, you're going to develop more as a pro and get some more in your professional development profile as well. So there's going to be some things that he learns from those two guys. And Teddy's already a really smart quarterback, and you can always learn more as a quarterback. And learning behind a future Hall of Famer like Drew Brees and a very advanced and very great play caller like Sean Payton is something that's going to benefit him as well. But we all know it's going to come back to what he is on the field. And that's what evaluators and GMs are going to want to know. We don't know if he's ever going to step on the field this year. And it's probably not going to happen unless Drew Brees suffers some type of injury or the Saints are just blowing the team out and they want to see what they have in Teddy. So I don't really like the situation from his standpoint.
Sean Payton about to make him a captain this year.
trying to sell him the dream.
You about to make him a captain, honorary captain on October 28th?
Oh yeah, no doubt. That'd be pretty funny.
That would be hilarious. Miles, man, what are your thoughts on this? I guess what are your thoughts specifically on the amount the Saints paid? Because third round pick seems pricey.
Yeah.
Especially given, you know, what JR laid out in terms of them already being down a first. What do you think that signals with them, you know, really paying a premium? You know, third round picks are valuable picks to get Teddy Bridgewater into their system, into their camp. And what do you think it means for his future?
This tells me that they feel like Drew, either if one of two things, obviously that Drew Brees might retire after the season, or that they're going to try to make this a Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady situation where they feel in the next year or two that if they can sell Teddy Bridgewater the idea that it'll be his team for the foreseeable future once Drew Brees leaves, because Drew Brees is on a two-year contract, that he can learn behind Drew Brees and be with Sean Payton and look at the team around him, all that kind of stuff. Sell him that bill of goods. Sell him the idea that, you know, I know it's a long time for him to have to wait, but it's going to be worth it in the long run. That's where I see it. I don't – like I said, I don't really know if that's going to be the real case or not. But it also just tells me that they do believe him – they do believe he was the best option for them to be their backup quarterback this season. We know that there was no team in the NFL, at least currently right now, that probably would have brought him in to be their day one starter, just for the fact that right now all the teams seem to have their clear-cut day one starter. I mean, it was unfortunate for Teddy that Sam Darnold came in and played as well as he has, and to the point where they couldn't hold him back even a redshirt year to give Teddy a chance to start. But otherwise, the only other team right now would be Buffalo, but I really don't see them spending draft capital on Teddy just to do the same thing that the Jets are basically going to do anyways. But yeah, for the most part, it's going to be really hard for them to sell him that bill of goods, just for the fact Teddy's not going to want to sit out another year of football, even though it's not his choice. I think we know how Teddy is. He's going to be really, you know, open about how he's okay with the situation, even though he probably isn't. But he knows it's a tough one that he's in, and he's going to have to play the game a little bit longer until he gets that opportunity again in the offseason. So I am really curious to see what the approach is. If they do just view him as a backup quarterback, or if they do view him as a long-term starter down the road. They'll have that opportunity with their medical staff to check out his knee, to see how things progress as the season goes. If they feel it's something they don't have to worry about next year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road. Lots of situations to think about, but to spend a premium pick, like a third-round pick, on a guy that is on a one-year contract is a little steep. So I do wonder if they do view him as the future, and if they do think this might be Drew Brees' last season. So only time will tell, but you never know.
Okay.
I am happy for him, though. I do think if he was the starter there right now, they'd be in a great situation. Obviously, they have Drew Brees, so that's a Hall of Fame quarterback. But I do think out of all the teams he could have gone to, this is probably the most favorable for a team that he wouldn't be starting on. I think it's the most favorable one for him.
Okay. And Saxy Prince, bring us home. But before you give us your hard-hitting analysis on this trade, who's going to have more yards this season? Teddy Bridgewater throwing the football, or Laquon Treadwell catching passes?
Laquon Treadwell.
Okay.
Right. Miles and JR has basically hit on most of the points. I do think that the reason why they gave up such a premium pick, because I think they were essentially trying to say, like, hey, we do view this guy as, you know, a guy who could potentially be our guy of the future. And if that's really your mentality, you know, yes, third round pick is a premium pick, but that, you know, is better than using a first round pick. And we've seen plenty of first round pick quarterbacks be bust. So, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, he still has quite a bit to prove, but has shown you to be a quarterback that, you know, when surrounded with talent, can get the job done. So I think this is a brilliant move for the Saints. I don't think that they're just going to bring this guy in just to be a long-term backup or anything of that nature. I think if they're using a third-round pick for this guy, I think they're strongly considering him as the quarterback of the future. And I know that a lot of draft comparisons compared Teddy Bridgewater as, you know, when he was coming in as kind of a Drew Brees type quarterback and whatnot, just how accurate he is, you know, in that intermediate game, how he's really smart, can process things very quickly. So I think it's a fantastic move for the Saints. And it kind of speaks to, this is kind of how you want to continue to keep your team relevant for years to come. You know, the Saints are going from, you know, having a guy like Drew Brees to, you know, if Teddy develops into what he could develop into, having another solid guy for another, you know, 10, 15 years. You know, we've seen it with Green Bay Packers, with Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers. You've seen it with the Colts, with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. I mean, if you really want to stay competitive in this league, you definitely have to have that quarterback. But even more so in the current situation, they have a backup quarterback. They have their starter, and then they also have a quarterback who is a starter or caliber quarterback, which is the better way to build than it is having a guy who is your unquestioned starter but then having to back up who you're really hoping. Well, we really hope he can get us through one or two games. So, no, I think it's a fantastic move for the Saints. And, you know, I think they I don't think a third-round pick is quite premium enough as it pertains to, you know, potentially answering your the question at quarterback for the next foreseeable future.
Okay. All right. Well, a lot of stuff happened. Let's talk Aaron Rodgers next. Aaron Rodgers getting all the money. Saxy Prince, we'll start with you because I know how much you love it when quarterbacks get paid. So let's talk about Aaron Rodgers getting all the money. How do you feel about Aaron Rodgers getting, Miles, how much was it by St. Patrick's Day?
Was it $88 million by St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, boy.
Saxy so if Prince. That, so if you calculate that out, hold on real quick. If that's 28 weeks from now, they'd have to pay him $3.14 million a week. And that doesn't even include his 2018 salary. So,
Lord.
Crazy.
That's so much money.
So, Prince, thoughts?
So, you guys know how much I hate quarterbacks getting paid, but this is a quarterback that I don't hate getting paid because this is the kind of contract and the kind of caliber of quarterback that deserves this kind of money. He is probably unquestioned, arguably one of the best, if not the best quarterback in the league. And he has been for a long time, and he probably will be for the next foreseeable future. And he's also the kind of guy who we needed him to take a contract like this. I actually still think he got underpaid. I think he should have, I mean, $150-200 million for all I care, considering like he has kept the Packers afloat for so long. Not to say that he hasn't had weapons. He has had weapons. You know, he's had a pretty decent offensive line. He's had pretty decent wide receiver weapons. But for the most part, his defense has been pretty pedestrian compared to what it could have been. And he's had to bring them continually back to the playoffs and the NFC championships. And I think that you saw his value last season when he went down. Packers season was done, and they all knew it. So, in my opinion, again, he's even still underpaid for what he brings to that organization. And I'm happy that he got paid this amount of money because I think he's one of the few people who deserve this amount of money compared to, you know, guys that we've seen, the Mike Glennons of the world or the Brock Osweilers, like those guys who shouldn't be paid this amount of money have. So I'm okay with it.
Wow. Prince is all right with QBs getting paid. Miles Gorham. So
No. Good QBs
getting paid. Sorry.
No. Apologies. At least say elite QBs.
Okay. Sorry. Yes.
Because we know QBs are getting paid.
Elite QBs getting paid.
No, there are some good QBs who are not getting paid still. But
Tom Brady. You're right.
Well, no, that's Tom Brady's choice. That's Tom Brady's choice.
Tom Brady's getting his money. He's still getting his money.
I'm
getting all his cash, you know, probably not hitting the salary cap, but that's neither here nor there. That's a conversation for another time. Miles, so there's a talking point. It's a strange one. From my perspective anyway, it's a weird talking point given the Vikings' current situation, because it seems like many of the same people who like to tweet, oh, I thought the Vikings were going to lose all their players when they signed Kirk Cousins to a long-term contract, are now saying that the Packers are going to lose all their players because they signed Aaron Rodgers to a long-term contract. From your perspective, from what you've seen of the deal, and I don't think all of the details are out there yet, but from what you've seen, what you understand this deal to be, what are your thoughts on how this affects the Packers as they move forward with things?
Well, if this deal is anything similar to kind of the way Drew Brees' deal is in terms of how it really hurts the team in terms of cap, because Drew Brees has really put a number on that Saints cap over his career, which is good for him. He should, but to make sure he gets his money. But it sounds like, at least from first blush, that it might have taken some of the cap off of 2018. But that just tells me if he's still got that huge contract, that if it doesn't go into effect till next year, it's still going to be a $30 million cap hit or whatever that is. Like, it's still going to be a pretty crazy number. But I really do believe that what they're trying to do is you equate with how you expect the cap to go up every season. I think they anticipate to go up another 10 to $12 million next year. based off the inflation, whatever, yada, yada. So they account for that. But they also, you look at their roster and they can be pretty flexible. They have a lot of young players, especially on their defensive side of the ball, that are not yet ready to be paid. So they can keep them on their rookie contracts, and them contributing on the field helps a lot. You have guys like Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews who are likely not going to either be there in the next few days or in the next year. So you have guys that, you know, they could take off the books for cheap and kind of recoup some of that money that they have invested. Or, I don't see them being heavy players in free agency moving forward, which is kind of expected. They haven't really been too big of heavy ones. They have a lot of pieces in place that they do like. Davante Adams, they got Jimmy Graham. Muhammad Wilkerson, I can't remember if he's on a one-year or two-year deal, though. And obviously the rookies that they've brought in the last couple of seasons. So they have some flexibility there. It's just all about those final numbers from Rodgers. But like I said, I don't think it's going to be something that's going to completely hamstring them. I think they'll still be able to make some moves, but we'll see.
Jason, could I hop in here for a second? Because I actually like what you asked. I think it's a little bit of a straw man when people kind of are like, you know, they kind of make fun of the people who were scared about us not being able to sign all the players. Let's kind of put it into perspective. I don't think anybody who was worried about the contract situation was concerned with 2018. I think the biggest issue was, like we've talked on the pod before, was more so about our depth moving forward and also years to come. So, you know, you're looking at 2019, you're looking at 2020, 2021, when you're having some of these other contracts that are expiring. So it's not just 2018. Yeah, we could have signed whoever for the 2018 season and we'll be fine. It's those future contracts and how it affects the team later down the road that people are concerned about. So I just wanted to put the mentality in perspective, because I think some are strawmanning against a point that no one is really making.
Yeah, that's fair. And thank you for making that point. JR, as you look at this now, it pains me to say it, but when you look at the offseason the Packers are having, you know, free agency draft, the new regime is doing work. I guess, what are your thoughts on kind of how this affects the Packers going forward? And I guess if you're looking forward to kind of what your expectations are for how they build this team around Rodgers going forward, I guess, how do you think they're going to continue to build it as they move forward? Look, this year was about the secondary. I guess, what are your thoughts for what they're going to look to add with all these premium draft assets that they still have?
Yeah, I think they've had one of the more impressive quietly had one of the better or best off seasons of any team, in my opinion, as far as stacking draft capital and retaining their own. I thought the Aaron Rodgers deal was phenomenal. I mean, a guy of that stature, you have to find a way to re-sign him and make him your future. And, I mean, he's a franchise player. He's one of the guys that's the faces of the entire NFL as well, and it would be really bad if you just let him walk out the door to another team. You don't let elite quarterbacks walk out the door, especially a guy that you drafted and he's been with you and won you a Super Bowl as well. So I think I haven't seen the structure of the deal or hasn't been released or anything like that. But regardless, a guy like that, you're always going to feel like he is underpaid. And I think he got $33.5 to $34 million a year. So me and Jason always talk about this all the time. We were waiting for that one quarterback to just completely obliterate the market for quarterbacks. And he finally did that. And it's going to be interesting to see exactly who's the next big quarterback to get paid and exactly how much he would be paid per year. And I don't think that number will surpass or even come close to what Aaron Rodgers is making, but it would be interesting to see if it gets to 31 or 32 or even if it gets close to Rodgers at all. But Brian Gutekunst, the Packers GM, has done a phenomenal job from acquiring Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson in the draft and getting that extra first-round pick to re-signing Aaron Rodgers and a host of other moves. I thought they drafted really well this year as well. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what he does with those two first-rounders next year. And he'll have a better idea after the season this year to see exactly where he needs help at. But we always said that they need an edge rusher with Clay Matthews getting older and a host of other guys getting older as well. They have never had that dominant edge rusher outside of Clay Matthews and when Julius Peppers was with them for a short time as well. So they need some guys off the edge. And I even floated out there today that if I was Gutekunst, I would call John Gruden and Reggie McKenzie to see if I could offer them Randall Cobb and 2 first-round picks. I would do that in a heartbeat. And we all know the Raiders need some help at receiver because that's the position that they're lacking in right now. And, I mean, 2 first-round picks, we all know, is very fancy, and fans really value highly draft picks. And I'm of the belief that if I can get an assured elite talent like Khalil Mack at a position that I need sorely or very badly, and it's an elite player as well, and I have the cap room to re-sign him as well. You talk about Aaron Rodgers being the face of your offense for the future, and now you have your building block for your defense as well. So that would be an idea that – or a tactic that I would try to execute if I was Brian Gutekunst. And I think it's a plan that he should go with, and that's a deal that I would do in a heartbeat if I was the Packers. Now, that's not to say that the Raiders would accept that deal, but I think they would have to listen because you're – offering them a proven veteran in Randall Cobb, and you're also giving them 2 first-round picks as well. So that's definitely a deal that should be admirable to them.
I feel like, you know, the basic structure of the deal that you're talking about makes some sense, but I feel like you got to, you know, put some seasoning on it. Like Saxy Prince was saying earlier, put Clay Matthews in there. You know, he's old. Gruden loves him some Clay Matthews. You got to, you know, give them an edge rusher to replace the one you're taking from them with those first round picks and maybe some Randall Cobb. But you know, yeah. Gruden loves him some Clay Matthews, and he's trash. So, you know, that's the kind of deal that they need to make. Get the Claymaker up out of there.
I just don't. I think they trade Cobb before Matthews.
Trade them both. Yeah. Get them all out of there.
You really can give it. I've been saying get Clay. I mean, as much old talent as they've been accumulating over the last this offseason, give him Clay Matthews. I'm sure Gruden will jump at the opportunity to get his hands on a guy like that. So
yeah, man, you know all that grit. But all right, let's keep it moving here because, you know, we still got some things to cover. We're still on the clock here. We're not going to spend a lot of time because there was a lot of news. These next two stories, well, one more than the other. But, you know, the first one we're going to talk about, Vikings related, Caleb Jones arrested. I still don't have all the details. The things that I guess the reading of the charges doesn't seem very good. And I really don't have much to say about it. The only thing I think I'm going to say about it is that when these sorts of things happens, it really shows how twisted we all are as fans, because our first thoughts, the first things that I read from really most everyone on the timeline were like, oh, man, he's not going to make the team now, or Chad Beebe is going to make the team. And it's like, man, this dude probably needs some help, especially after all the things going on with his brother. We really don't care at all about these people at all outside of them in the context of our football team. But I guess really with this said, with the Caleb Jones thing, I guess we'll just go rapid fire down the line here, starting with JR. Any chance that he remains on the roster given the news that broke today? JR?
Zero. He might. Before this pod gets released, he might not even be a member of the Vikings anymore.
Yeah, that is fair. Miles, how about you, man?
I'm honestly surprised he hasn't been cut yet, but I'm sure they're just waiting to actually hear from him and bring him into the office to do it in person.
Okay. And Saxy Prince, are we making this a clean sweep? Any chance that, you know, after all this comes out, that there's any way that Caleb Jones ends up on the team?
No, he's probably already heard that he's gotten fired. So
okay, all right.
Yeah, no chance.
Okay, well, in lighter news, still dealing with the legal system, and it's really not lighter news because this news, I feel like, comes with, when you look at the max sentencing, much heavier time, which is weird because, you know, it's white-collar crime versus violent crime, but, like, this carries, like, serious federal time behind it. But Michael Kendricks, fan favorite this offseason, and one of the writers from Black-ish? I don't know. This story, it's just very weird. Caught up in an insider trading deal in which Michael Kendricks apparently turned $80,000 into $1.2 million? Something like that? I mean,
Pretty good.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Better than what he would have got invested with Carl Nassib, for sure. But JR, what is there? Is there anything to say? I mean, this is kind of a crazy story, and it is also funny with Jimmy Haslam and his problems that he has that are ongoing. legal stuff with swindling people for money that, you know, he has to deal with this on his team. But I guess you have anything you want to say, any input, any analysis of this Kendricks fiasco and then him subsequently being released by the Browns?
The only thing to say is that I am ready for Hard Knocks next week. I cannot Boy. Wait to see that.
Boy.
I can't wait.
It's going to be so good. Miles, what about you, man? Any thoughts on this Kendrick situation?
I mean,
why can't you people act right, Miles?
Oh, man. No, like, I'm all for dude making money, but like he even said he knew the risk he was taking. Bro, he's about to sing to get off.
He's in there right now, like, ask me.
He already name dropped. Like, he already did all you, that was like, hey, you or me.
What you. Would you like to know? Right. Ask me right now. What would you like to know? I will tell you everything. Michael Kendricks ain't going to jail. No.
Nope. Hey, his brother's got money, so he's straight.
Sexy Prince, man. What about you? What are your thoughts? Anything to add on the Kendrick situation?
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, these light-skinned folks, man, they'll dime you off so fast.
Always looking for special privileges.
The minute a dude names where you went to college in the deposition, oh, it's a done deal, y'all.
Hey, yo, like, Prince went to U of M, so.
Yeah, that's Miami, y'all. That's the U.
Yeah, he telling on everybody. Everybody. Okay. Well, we'll keep it moving here. We'll get back to a little bit of Vikings talk here, and it's the preseason. And again, so we're not gonna go too crazy. We're not gonna get, you know, really, really deep with the analysis here on the game. But obviously, Vikings played one. It's the dress rehearsal. Starters played versus starters for a little bit longer in this game. Seattle game recap, JR. What were your thoughts when you watched it initially? And then I guess if you watched it again, did those thoughts evolve, change? How did you feel about it in general?
It feels like the game was a million years ago. It really does.
Like, it really does.
It was like a month ago. But overall thoughts, I thought the offense looked better. I thought they rebounded. They had some situations where they did click. The running game looked a little bit better. I was a little disappointed in the defense early on. It seemed like the Seahawks did scheme up the Vikings a bit, and they were prepared by some of the run game concepts that they were running, and they specifically targeted Sheldon Richardson. He had a rough start to the game, but as the game went on after that second series, he really started to pick it up. And that first series in the second half where the starters started out, I thought he played extremely well, and that was really good to see him rebound from those first few series. But I thought Kirk Cousins was decent. For the most part, he looked to calm down a little bit more than he did last week, so against the Jaguars, and that was really good to see as well. I still want to see the chemistry get a little bit better in the passing game. I think there's some room to improve there, but overall, I'll probably give it a B minus for the most part. But Kyle Sluter was very good once again. I know we all pointed that out. Trevor Siemian looked really skittish in the pocket, so hopefully he'll play better this next game if he does end up dressing out, which I think he should because he really needs the reps in this new offense considering he is going to be the backup quarterback in this game. The offensive line looked a bit better from time to time. I thought the interior guys struggled a bit in stretches. It was a bit up and down for the most part. So overall, there were some guys that stood out, and, you know, the usuals, they did their thing as well. So I thought it was a good performance for the most part, though.
So, yeah, you mentioned some things chemistry-wise. Miles, I wanted to get your perspective on this because, I mean, some of it I know is me, you know, jumping in and trolling, you know, Jake Anderson. Shout out to Jake doing his thing over there at DLF. But some of it also, I mean, I'm actually, you know, being honest in the assessment of what I'm seeing. And it very much seems from the layperson perspective that Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs, have a chemistry that Kirk Cousins doesn't have yet with his other receivers. Then more often than not, when Kirk Cousins targets Stephon Diggs, good things happen. And it almost seemed a little bit like in this game, the Vikings kind of manufactured some touches for Adam Thielen where there were some more, I'd almost call them, I won't say, yeah, but they were kind of gimmicky type touches with like the Cordero Patterson type, like we're just going to throw you a screen pass so you can get your hands on the ball and try to do a little something type plays, or like the really, really short play, like throws close to the line of scrimmage and things like that, just to get his hands on the ball. I guess from your perspective watching it, is that something that we should be concerned about at all? Like, how does it work in terms of kind of quarterback, wide receiver, getting on that same page, getting that chemistry? And if you don't get it early, is it something that you pick up later on as the season goes along?
Yeah, I mean, I know JR can touch on this too, but I feel like for the most part, as a receiver, just getting the ball in your hands and just having the quarterback throw you the ball, even if it's a screen, a quick throw, something like that, just helps build that trust with each other. It helps that opportunity for you to, as a receiver, to see where the ball placement is going to be from your quarterback, how the ball comes off their hands. Cause it's different for each quarterback. Sometimes the way you're expecting certain passes to come, when you know where they're expected to be and where they're not, it varies and all that. So there's a lot of that stuff that happens. And obviously you can see that Diggs and Cousins are really on that page together already. But it also does seem like during practice that Cousins and Thielen are getting some of that chemistry, and they're connecting on plays. We just haven't seen it in the preseason yet. It also means that, you know, they haven't really schemed yet. They haven't prepared for the game. So the fact that I'm sure there are going to be some plays that are going to be manufactured for Thielen in the regular season, obviously, that we'll see the same thing for Diggs, and we'll see the same thing for Rudolph. For me, I guess I'm more worried about Rudolph than I am Cousins or Thielen at this point, just for the fact that we've seen almost next to nothing, and we know how much Cousins loves to use his tight ends. So I'm just curious where some of that is and why that chemistry hasn't come along a little bit further, just because the offense that's currently run from DeFilippo and Cousins, both those guys rely on tight ends heavily. So I am surprised more there than I am in Thielen. Thielen's going to have his opportunities. I know Cousins loves to throw the slot receiver and all that. I just think Diggs brings a little bit more dynamic playmaking ability that Thielen doesn't. So I'm sure that Cousins really likes that from him. And he knows the dude's always getting himself open. He makes contested catches, and he's a big play threat. And not to say that Thielen isn't, you know, some of those things, but I just think it just tells me that Cousins knows how good Diggs really is, and that's why he's his first read and his first option. But I'm not really worried about Thielen. I think time will come, and that chemistry will come as they get more familiar with each other and they start game planning. And I think you'll start seeing in their practices that this coming week when they actually start game planning for San Francisco, that chemistry is going to start making itself more known, because they're going to be having scripted plays instead of just, you know, the whole playbook being used in practice and kind of trying to figure things out early on. So I think it'll come in the, by even could obviously happen by week one. So I'm not too worried about it.
Okay. All right. Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts just with everything that we saw? Obviously, I know we spent a lot of time focusing on the offense because, you know, we spent a bunch of money on a quarterback this offseason, and so that's going to be one of the things we talk about a lot. I guess, you know, this game, the dress rehearsal, when the game was over, and I know it really does feel like it was last year when this game was played. From what you can remember, I guess, what were your feelings on, you know, everything once you watched it the first time? And then I know you watched it a couple other times after that. I guess, what were your thoughts and feelings kind of when you went back and dug into it and watched it a little bit more slowly outside of real time?
Yeah, I mean, the first time I kind of watched it, I was a little bit concerned with, you know, Cousins play and whatnot. I mean, that's just like overreaction. But I mean, it did look like I think Miles was saying it, like the Seahawks did scheme a little bit as far as this. So things weren't as vanilla as maybe he was expecting to see. But, upon watching it a few other times, you really saw that interior offensive line like failing Cousins quite a bit. I saw a number of throws where I could tell he wanted to step back. I could tell his mechanics were off a little bit, but he really had to adjust with having a lot of interior pressure that he wasn't expecting to have.
So it's still an area of concern. I could still see the Vikings making a move to get another interior guy just to protect Cousins. I think after that first season, first series, I think the defense was fine. You know, play here or there, but I think I would like to see a little bit more from Sheldon Richardson. I think JR had said it in our group chat, but like he definitely seemed to not be giving as much effort, especially when he got trap blocked quite a bit. You know, they let him get upfield, and then, you know, he would just let the play die after that. So just a couple watch throughs. You're just seeing little things as far as like, if as long as they can clean up, you know, little stuff on the defensive side of the ball, I think the offense is for the most part okay. The offensive line is still a huge concern, especially in that interior.
Okay. All right. So we're going to do it again. JR, give me one word to describe the Vikings' performance against Seahawks.
Decent.
Okay. Miles?
Can you repeat the question?
One word to describe the Vikings against the Seahawks.
Expect it. Fine.
Prince, you going to go with lukewarm? What's your word going to be? Zaxi Prince, one word to describe the Vikings' performance against the Seahawks.
Yeah, I guess I'll say, I don't know, average. Nothing exciting. Yeah, average.
All right. That is not a ringing endorsement. But again, preseason doesn't matter. So, you know, our offensive line didn't play together at all last preseason. And look what happened. We went 13-3. Obviously, that's going to happen again this year because that's how these things work. Okay, JR, you get one player. Just one player. Only one player. Who was your standout player from the from the Seahawks game? My goodness.
I'll go with Kyle Sluter.
Oh boy, you have made Don happy. Miles, standout player that is not Sergeant Slaughter.
Anthony Harris.
Okay. And Miles, you get to pick since, you know, Prince's internet kicked him off the pod again. You can pick for Prince. Who do you think Prince would pick as his standout player?
Kobe McCrary.
Perfect. Perfect.
You love it.
All right. Well, the next thing here, and this is something that actually, you know, preseason might not matter all that much, but this is something that does matter a little bit here, and it's trades. You know, we talked about Teddy Bridgewater being traded. Wasn't traded back to Minnesota, so, you know, not going to talk about that anymore. But Brett Jones, not Barrett Jones, Brett Jones, traded to the Vikings. Some might say, and part of a salary dump for the Giants to make space for that giant contract they gave to Odell Beckham Jr. Miles, I know you've been doing a lot of work scouring the waiver wires or the potential waiver wire and playerprofiler.com to look at athletic profiles that might fit. What can you tell me about Brett Jones?
Yeah, besides wasting my time, I literally put out O-linemen I could see the Vikings going after, whether it's trade or, you know, cutdowns. And I looked at the Giants roster. I looked at Brett Jones. I looked at John Jerry. I looked at guys, and I was like, with how that offensive line is and the way they've been in the recent history, I just didn't see them willing to give up a player like Brett Jones. So I just bypassed the Giants, basically. But yeah, Brett Jones, he was pretty good last year in 13 games he played. He played one game in left guard, and then when Weston Richburg got hurt, he played 12 games at center and did a really good job, especially in the pass game. He was PFF's 15th rated center, which is really good. He's higher than Pat Elflein, who was like 21, maybe a little higher, maybe a little worse than that. I don't remember off the top of my head. Not quite as good in the run game, but really good in the pass game. I think he was the fourth rated center in against the pass last season. I think he only gave up like two pressures the whole season. So yeah, he did a really good job in stepping in for an offensive line that wasn't very good at all last year. But what I really like about him most is his ability to play guard and center. He doesn't have his testing scores on Player Profiler just for the fact he didn't come from – he came from the CFL. He came from Canada, so he didn't go through any of the combine testings or regional combines or anything like that. So we don't have those numbers, but you could tell on tape that he doesn't quite get to the second level the way a Nick Easton does, at least in terms of athletically, but he has the ability to get to the second level. He just doesn't look quite as comfortable when he's there as a Nick Easton. But to me, he's better in the run game than Nick Easton is. He's a better pass protector, not by, I would say, a whole lot, but he's a better pass protector. And I just think he's a little bit stronger in general than a guy like Nick Easton. So I think if you were to, best case scenario, try to find a player that was at least close to Nick Easton's ability, or, you know, right in that range of what Nick Easton was expected to do this year, I think this is the best case scenario for that in terms of what you gave up in compensation. You only gave up a 7th round draft pick for a guy that has that kind of position flexibility, but he's a better center than Nick Easton is too. So we would be heading into week one right now with Nick Easton as a center, but Nick Easton's not a very good center. So I think that for that, that's where I'm really excited to the fact you don't need to rush a guy like Pat Elflein back. You obviously want him back as soon as possible, but Brett Jones being able to hold down the fort at center helps you a lot. And then he could slide over to guard, and you don't really lose a whole lot from what you had last year in terms of Nick Easton being the left guard. I think Brett Jones can step in and do a really good job once he kind of gets up to speed. So, and I think they've noted too that him coming from the Giants, it helps because I think I always say his name wrong. Coach DeFlip.
Help him out, JR. JR, help him out.
Oh, I say it wrong.
Just call him JDF. JDF.
Yeah. JDF.
DeFilippo.
DeFilippo, there it is. He made note that with Shermer's offense that they have similar terminology. There's a lot of similarities from last year's offense that they're keeping. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. He's going to have a lot of opportunity to be able to understand and learn the offense a lot quicker. And I know that Zimmer and Shermer had conversations once the trade went through. So that tells me that there was a lot of excitement from both sides. Well, from the Vikings side to be able to get this kind of player, and Shermer to be able to tell him, you know, strengths, weaknesses, kind of what his thoughts are on Jones. So I'm excited about it. I think it's a really good pickup, and I think he could really help the offensive line.
With Brett Jones coming from Canada, JR, is he someone that you watched any tape on ever at any point in your life before this week?
No, he is not. He's actually someone I hadn't heard much about prior to the trade as well. Everyone knows that he was very high on Pro Football Focus's pass blocking efficiency ratings for interior offensive linemen. But as far as run blocking, that's really where he struggles. But maybe that's him at center is maybe an area where they can hide him in between their two guards. Just because that center, yes, is a very important position, but it's not as important as guard or tackle is. And it's going to be interesting to see exactly where they do play him once Pat Elflein does come back. I think they'll slide him over to left guard to fill Nick Easton's spot. But for the time being, I think he'll play center. And how quickly can he adjust to the team scheme? I think he'll be just fine, considering that he did come from the Giants. Like Miles mentioned, they have very similar terminology from John DeFilippo to Pat Shermer as well. So I think he'll be up to speed very quickly, and he really has no choice, because considering the compensation that they did get for him and the role that he's expected to fill, I think they want him to be a plug-and-play guy right away from week one.
All right. And last trade-related thing as it kind of relates to the Vikings here, a lot of hinting from a friend of the show, Paul Allen, that the Vikings might not be done. And then the kind of the latest rumor that is making its way around the timeline, Vikings Twitter, is that potentially the Vikings might look to move some of their, you know, defensive back depth to bring in another piece to help bolster that offensive line. JR, what are your thoughts on them potentially moving a DB to bring in an O-lineman, and then what guys might be on the move if you had to kind of guess who might go and what quality of player would come back for those types of guys?
Yeah, I would not trade a DB for an interior offensive lineman unless it's a guy like a Jayron Kearse or somebody along that lines. But if it was any of the Vikings cornerbacks, I would not trade any of the guy, any of those guys that they're expected to be their top six. I don't really count Marcus Sherrills. I count him as more of a specialist. But I know Mackenzie Alexander is a name that has been floated around there a lot. I would not trade him for an interior offensive lineman considering the contract that he's on, the reps you have invested in him. And I think the upside that he does have at nickel, I think you'll be fine there, even though with the emergence of Mike Hughes and him providing competition with Hughes, I just don't think it's worth trading him for an interior offensive line because now you're only stuck with Mike Hughes and Terrence Newman at that nickel spot, and I just don't like the depth there if they were to trade Mackenzie Alexander. I know a name that's been floated out there a lot by Miles is Evan Smith from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's a guy that would be a scheme fit, and also he's still very young.
Gimme.
And he's a guy that ranked – I think he's like the 24th or 25th ranked guard on Pro Football Focus as well. So he's a guy that's shown to be very reliable as well. But as far as trading for someone, I would not do that if I was them, considering that there's going to be a host of veterans that are going to be cut over the weekend. So I would just scour those – the waiver wire just to see exactly who does get cut, and I would bring one of those guys in to – solidify the final 53-man roster.
Okay, Miles, what about you?
What are your thoughts on these rumors? Yeah, I think I agree with everything JR said. I think if you were to trade a defensive back like Mackenzie Alexander, the rate on return you're going to get from the and the quality of player you're going to get compared to Mackenzie Alexander doesn't even compare. Like, you're not going to get a Kelechi Osemele. You're not going to get a Zach Martin. You're not going to get some of these top-tier interior offensive lineman that would even come close to what impact you're going to get from a Mackenzie Alexander. So it just doesn't make sense to me. Like a trading Mackenzie Alexander for like JR pointed out, like a JR and Evan Smith. Like, I like Evan Smith a lot, but like, imagine giving that up for a 32-year-old interior offensive lineman just because he's cheap. But like that just doesn't, it wouldn't make sense to me. It wouldn't equate. The drop off between a guy like Evan Smith or from Evan Smith to even a Brett Jones for that matter, or we know Tom Compton's not very good, but even a Tom Compton, like that gap between those players is not like so much that you're getting that much better of a return from that player than you would get from Mackenzie Alexander staying on the roster for two more years. So I wouldn't like that idea. Like JR pointed out, Jayron Kearse would be perfectly fine with me. With, we know how some teams are hurting at safety a little bit. You trade a guy like Jayron Kearse for a young offensive lineman or whatever, a guy that might not make the roster. That's fine with me. That makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, if you're looking to trade, it would need to be like a conditional draft pick, future 2019, 2020, whatever. Otherwise, it wouldn't really make sense for me to make a quote-unquote blockbuster trade. I think the trade that the Vikings made today is the best one that they're probably going to get for that quality of a player without having to give up significant assets. So I'm agree 100% with what JR is saying, is just wait it out. They're going to be guys that come available that you can get that can contribute on this team right now if they're just patient about it. Now, I know there have been talks about linebacker depth that they're really worried about. I'm curious, and I haven't really dove into this on who's out there, who's available, but they could look to make a move for a linebacker. That could make sense. Obviously, it's not going to be Michael Kendricks anymore, but he's a guy that you could have looked at before. But there's going to be some teams that let go of some aging, you know, vet linebackers just to cut some costs or whatnot, and I think the team could look to add one of those guys.
Okay. We're not going to go all the way through all y'all's 53-man roster predictions. They're on Twitter. I'll put them in the show notes. But, JR, as you were going through, what position was the most challenging for you to kind of figure out the cuts? One, and then two, after you figured it out, obviously we know linebacker is an issue, But is there another position or maybe position or two that you were looking at? And once you kind of looked at the whole roster, you still don't feel great about our depth there.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with the linebacker spots. They usually like to carry five, but I think they're only going to carry four this year and just use George Iloka as that swing linebacker safety hybrid. So the four guys I have making it at linebacker were Barr and Kendricks, of course, and Gideon and Eric Wilson were the final two that I did have making it. And George Iloka would be that fifth linebacker that they could use as that linebacker safety hybrid. But the other position that really concerned me from a depth standpoint is receiver. After Diggs, Thielen, and Treadwell, I think it's a significant drop-off, whether that's Wright and Coley, which are the two guys that I have making it, Chad Beebe, and a host of other guys that are up for that fifth and sixth spot. But I only have five guys making it because they want to have more depth at some other spots, and I think receiver is the one area where I think they're going to have that one casualty or carry one less number than they did a year ago. They carried six last year, and they only carried five defensive backs last year. So I think this year they'll carry six cornerbacks and five receivers. So they're going to flip-flop that this year. But I think receiver depth is a huge weakness on the Vikings roster right now.
Hey, Jared, you say six cornerbacks because you don't really count Sherrills as a cornerback.
Yeah, I have him down as a specialist.
Okay.
Yep.
Miles was ready to fight. You see that, JR?
No, I knew.
Anytime you leave Sherrill, Miles like, "What's up? What's up? What's up with Sherrill's, yo?" Miles was ready.
Yeah, I count him as a specialist because that's where he provides most of his value at.
Hey, but Jaron Curse is a more valuable specialist than.
I mean, yeah, best punt gunner in the history of punt gunners, yo.
Yeah.
In the history of punt gunners. History. Miles, I guess for you, what stood out? Obviously, I mean, you know, we've talked quite a bit about the linebackers position and the lack of depth there. I know we've talked a little bit about the wide receivers. Anything else for you? And when you look at things here, outside of the obvious, you know, offensive line, linebacker, I guess potentially wide receiver, were there any other positions that you're looking at where you think the Vikings will be very active, you know, when other teams start making their cuts?
Yeah, well, to start, I will start with the offensive line because I do think that was the hardest part for me just for the fact that we don't know what they're going to do with Pat Elflein. I know Zimmer said he doesn't expect him to stay on the PUP during the regular season. They expect to take him off of it. But we don't know that. They still haven't done it yet. So until that happens, it's really hard to determine how that O-line shakes out because do you keep Cornelius Edison? Do you not keep Edison? It all comes down to where they think Pat Elflein is, and if they think, you know, Jones is ready to go by week one. Which, for all, everything that we've heard, everything we expect is he's going to be their week one center. Brett Jones is going to be, but who's that backup? It sounds like Danny Isadora is taking center reps now, so that might be their backup plan in the short term if Elflein does stay off of PUP. So that's one for me that was really difficult to kind of to navigate around. And then, like you had said, a few other positions, that safety position, if they do want to keep Jaron Curse and then keep four linebackers and, you know, maybe nine D linemen, like there's a few things here and there that I'm a little unsure of. But in terms of looking for scanning the waiver wire, I do think, like JR mentioned, wide receiver is going to be a big one. I wonder if a third tight end is one that they look at doing, kind of what they did last year with Blake Bell, because Tyler Conklin has looked fine. Like he's, I think there's potential there, and I think a redshirt year for him would be good. He's done better blocking than I think they expected to, but in terms of finding that little bit more of a dynamic guy at the tight end position, if they wanted to do that, if someone became available, I could potentially see that. Otherwise, I just think it's offensive line is really the key one, and then linebacker. I would love wide receiver to be that. I really do think they're high on Stacy Coley. He's another one that you have to really keep an eye on because we don't know the extent of his injury. We don't know what his injury is. So if for some reason he goes on to IR or whatever that situation is, that really changes a lot too because I think he makes a team if he's going to be healthy by week one. I just think they like him too much. They think, and he knows the offense, and he can be a pretty decent depth receiver on this team. But it's that Brandon Zylstra, Chad Beebe, that the back end of the wide receiver group, and Kendall Wright. For everything we've heard, it sounds like they like him now that things have started to get better with him, his understanding of the playbook. He's starting to see a little bit more run with the ones. You know, it seems like he's the first guy in if Thielen or Diggs goes out. So it seems like he might be a lock for the roster right now, but we'll see. But I would like to see them try to find a little bit more of a veteran or a little more experienced, an upgrade at wide receiver for some of those depth positions, just because I think you could find somebody to do a little bit more than a Brandon Zylstra, a potentially Chad Beebe if they wanted to keep him, which I think he's
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
He's the prime practice squad candidate, and I think it says everything. I think people need to take the idea that he's playing with threes and four, playing against threes and fours, with a little bit of a grain of salt, just for the fact that stuff doesn't always translate to doing the same thing against ones and twos. So take that with a grain of salt. I don't think just because he's put some decent tape there, that means he's automatically a lock for a 53-man roster spot. So yeah, there's the roster for the most part is pretty solidified. If you look at it, you know, basically the top 50 or so spots, it's just about finding, you know, 3, 4, 5 spots that you're really kind of unsure of and how you want that rotation to go in terms of D line. Do you want to keep nine offensive linemen? Do you want to keep 9 D linemen, 4 linebackers, 4 or 5 safeties? So there's a lot of things that we're unsure of that they're talking about right now that we'll be curious to see. And like you said, Jason, I am really curious to see how many players they look to bring in off the waiver wire, or, you know, veterans that get cut, and, you know, what that could shake up the roster as well.
Okay. All right. We're almost there, guys. We're almost there because, I mean, I feel like we got to talk, at least mention it. I don't think we really need to talk about it a lot. We need to mention it just a little bit because, I mean, the Vikings do play a game against the Titans. But there's like the Vikings really don't play a game because none of like the really good players for the Vikings are actually going to play. It's this game where like all the dudes, it's probably the most important game in terms of guys trying to make the team, but it's going to be a bad football game because it's going to be a bunch of guys who won't be playing in the league fighting to make the team, and it's going to be sloppy and all that stuff. So we're not going to do too much talking about this game that's upcoming here with the Titans because, I mean, what strategy is there really for us to talk about? I just have a couple questions for you here. I feel like I know the answers, but I'm going to ask them anyway. JR, from a quarterback's perspective, you know, Marcus Mariota, you know, the Titans, and they were one of those teams picked by a lot of people, including myself, to maybe, you know, turn things around. Maybe a breakout season for Marcus Mariota with all of the talent around them, new scheme, modern scheme, actually throwing the football, all those things. Marcus Mariota has looked terrible so far in the preseason. Should I be worried?
No, not at all, because the preseason is where you experiment and get reps in the new offensive scheme. Yes, it's worrisome that he hasn't looked completely comfortable at all in Matt LaFleur's new scheme, but I don't think you should be worried at all going into the season because they're just experimenting with new concepts and new plays that they potentially want to run during the season, and the preseason is where you play around with those plays just to see exactly what and which plays he's most comfortable with. And I'm sure that those plays that he's not comfortable with are shown to be able to execute during the preseason. They're not going to run those plays during the year just because it's something that he's not fully committed to or fully comfortable with going out and executing on game day. But those plays that he has looked comfortable with and executed flawlessly throughout the preseason, that's something that they will incorporate into the playbook and something that they will keep in the back of their mind once week one does start. So I wouldn't be concerned at all because it's just an experimental period, especially with him operating and playing in a new, completely new offensive system.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess on to players that are actually going to be on the field. Miles, what matchups are you most going to be paying attention to in this game being played by people who we, I guess the casual sports fan probably won't even know?
He said matchups.
Yeah, matchups, players. How about players? Just players. I'm going to change that in the show notes. Matchups. Yeah. We don't even know who's going to be playing against who when. what players are you most going to be focusing your attention on in this game? Like, who needs to ball out to solidify or maybe get onto the 53 that maybe you didn't have on your 53 initially?
Definitely. Brandon Zylstra, he's on my 53 right now, but I just think he needs to – he could be one of those guys that they keep on the 53, but come Saturday, somebody else gets cut that they want to bring in that they like better. So he's the type of guy that I think needs to show out tomorrow because we haven't seen him do much of anything at all in the preseason. I think he only played a limited amount of snaps on Friday. So I think he's one of those guys. Rashad Cleat. And the linebackers.
You can't pronounce his name. He's not making the team.
You
haven't even heard the broadcaster say his name this preseason, so he's probably not making it.
you're right, though. He probably isn't, but like that fifth linebacker position, it really is up for grabs. You know, Garrett Dooley, Devontae Downs. I don't think any of those guys are going to make it, but Rashard Cleat, those guys have an opportunity. Antoine Williams, who's played pretty – he's flashed a little bit here and there, nothing special. He obviously had that that sack and penalty against Cody Kessler in the Jags game.
Ruined the game.
Yeah. But that position right there, I mean, if they decided they wanted to keep five, then one of these guys needs to step up and basically say, I'm going to make you keep five linebackers because you can't cut me. Kind of one of those scenarios, but I don't think – that's fully going to happen. Jayron Kearse is one of those guys that really needs to show out completely, though, because I do think his job's on the line. When they brought in Iloka, I really do think that was the writing on the wall. I don't think being a punt gunner is good enough to solidify a position on a roster when you have four safeties better than you. He's not a Marcus Sherrills where he returns punts, kicks, and is probably arguably one of the better special teams all-around players in the NFL. I don't think he's at that level. So there's that. And then Holton Hill's that last one where you just want to see him just solidify the fact that he's been getting better as the weeks have gone on. You want to see him play full-time duty and just match up well against wide receivers and tackle well because he's struggled a little bit in tackling and just – look comfortable out there. You just want to see him look comfortable. And because I do think that they want to keep him on this roster because they see that potential there and that future, kind of like what they did with Deshaun Bauer last year, where he might not, play in the regular season. He might not dress, but you want to keep him around. He's not one of those guys you want to lose. So those are the main positions. And then I don't even care, but Daniel Carlson, just for, shits and giggles for the fact that he probably doesn't want to miss kicks, and I know Zim wouldn't be happy if he missed any kicks tomorrow, so there's that, but I'm not really worried about that one.
Okay. All right. JR, for you, last preseason game. Anything?
So a couple of people, Miles named a few of them. Holton Hill is a big one that I'll be watching. I would just want to see if he continues to look more comfortable than what he did last week against the Seahawks. I thought he played really well last week against the Seahawks. It looked much better than what he did in previous games, but I think he's continuing to make strides in his development, and I just think fans need to pump the brakes a bit on him. They were expecting him to come in, and some people were saying that he was going to overtake Trey Waynes in camp, which I just thought was ludicrous talk, but just pump the brakes with him and understand that he is a long-term project. I still think that he's going to make the 53-man roster, but I expect him to be inactive on game days. But he's a very nice ball of clay for Mike Zimmer and Jerry Gray to mold for the future, and I expect something out of him probably in the next 2 years. So he's a really nice project to have in-house. Another guy that I'll be paying very close attention to is Brian O'Neill. I'm really hoping that Harold Landry does play this game because I think that would be a very nice matchup between those two. Harold Landry was the Titans' second-round pick, and we all know Brian O'Neill was the Vikings' second-round pick as well. So that would be a really nice matchup, and it would be a true test to how well he is how good he is as a pass protector, because that's where Harold Landry's strong suit is as a pass rusher. But I would like to see him continue to make strides as a run blocker because I think that's where most of his deficiencies are right now. So that Brian O'Neill-Harold Landry matchup is something that I would be paying close attention to. And also, I just want to see the quarterbacks. Can Trevor Siemian continue to operate the offense, or not even continue? Can he find some life and engineer this offense to scoring some points and just look comfortable when he's out there? He just hasn't looked comfortable when he was out there. His accuracy has been all over the place. He's been very skittish and uncomfortable in the pocket. And as the backup quarterback, you want him to have a good showing just so you can be confident in him going into week one, especially considering the type of injuries that the Vikings have had at that position in previous years. And we all know he could be in there. He's one play away from playing. So Trevor Siemian is a guy that I want to see perform very well, and Kyle Sluter. He's probably a guy that's going to play most of the game, and I just want to see if he can continue to take another step in his development as well, and hopefully he can lock down that number three spot and earn his spot on the 53-man roster.
All right, gentlemen. Good work. A lot of news to cover. You guys had to step up, do a little bit more here when Saxy Prince had to step away. Excellent work from both of you. But we made it all the way to the end, covered all the topics we wanted to cover. I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did. I think we got everything in the show notes this time around. So, yeah, that's it. I think in terms of, you know, upcoming projects, things that have been dropped recently on the site, we have Flip's latest pod, 15 Minutes with Flip. Make sure you go on and check that one out. Scolders will be dropping a little bit later this week than usual due to some scheduling conflicts with fantasy football drafts and things like that. And fantasy football drafts are very important, so, you know, got to get those things done. But Scolders will be dropping a little bit later in the week than usual. But Climbing the Pocket's dropping a little bit earlier, so it all works out for you in the end. This weekend, we're going to have a very fun episode of Good Morning Gjallarhorn. Saxy Prince will be jumping on with David and Drew. That should be a good one. And, yeah, that's it in terms of stuff. JR, you did your usual spot with Andy. It seems a little bit earlier this week. So that is out there. It's been retweeted from the account. Make sure you check that out. Support our man JR and friend of the show, Andy Carlson. And if you want to support the pod, make sure you head on over to Thrive Fantasy. Click the link in the show notes. Sign up. First 10 bucks, they'll match the 10. Use our link. You support the pod. Everyone wins. And that's it. That's the show. I got nothing else. JR Miles, thanks for coming on. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. And yeah, we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.